You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
And welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. Well, hey, interest rates still heading up. Economy looks like it's heading for the crapper. And what can you do about it? That's the question. Well, Jim Welsh, MacroTides.com, is with us now. Jim, welcome back. So we got problems aplenty here, haven't we?
I think so. And maybe one of the biggest problems, Carrie, is in an unusual fashion, members of the FOMC, Chair Powell, have been pretty much speaking with one voice in terms of what they intend to do with monetary policy. And what we've seen all year is, A, well, we don't believe they're actually going to do it back in March, April, when they said they were going to raise the funds rate to a restrictive level. And then over the summer, oh my God, we're in a recession. The Fed's going to raise rates only to bring it down. And of course, there was no recession in the middle of this year. People were wrong about that. And now I think people are misinterpreting the idea that, gee, if the Fed only raises the funds rate by 50 basis points, that represents a pivot. No, it does not represent a pivot. And I think Chair Powell again made that very clear. They're going to nudge the funds rate up in coming months. They're trying to find a restrictive level. No, there's no scientific way to do that. But more importantly, Carrie, what they intend to do then is hold the funds rate at a very high level for all of next year. And again, the main point, and I've written about this extensively over the last probably 4 to 6 months, they're trying to avoid the mistakes of the 1970s, where they would jam on the brakes by raising the funds rate very significantly, cause a recession, which then forced them to reverse policy, bring the funds rate down, only to do it again and again throughout the 70s. So what they're trying to do is, hey, we're going downhill, but instead of stepping on the brakes hard, they're trying to just keep the foot a little bit on the brake to slow the economy, but it's going to take longer. But by doing it that way, they hope to avoid a recession that would cause them to quickly, you know, pivot, cut rates. Because in the 1970s, the lesson was, if you just jam on the brakes and ease, you're not really going to have a meaningful decline in inflation that'll last, you know, for years and years. So that's what the Fed is going to do. I think it ultimately is going to lead to a recession, which I think is obviously going to have an impact, impact on financial markets in different ways.
Do you think it's really going to work, though, get rid of inflation?
No, I think there are some forces. It's going to come down. Inflation is going to come down. And if we go into recession and the unemployment rate climbs above 5%, which is what I think is going to happen next year, we will see a big reduction in inflation. The problem is things like the labor market tightness, I think, is a chronic problem. You have a demographic issue where we just don't have enough bodies to fill the jobs that are out there, and that is going to persist. We haven't invested in more oil and gas development like what was done in the 70s when oil prices shot up around, you know, with fracking in the 2006 to 2014 period. So I think energy prices are going to stay at a higher plateau than they otherwise would. And then finally, globalization, which was very helpful for much of the last 20 years in bringing costs down. In other words, we imported goods from China and other places, and the actual prices of those things were negative in many years, offsetting service inflation. So I think we're going to see a reduction in inflation, but then it's going to hold at that a level that is probably, in terms of the Fed's favorite measure, core PCE, above 3%. And then we'll see what the Fed decides to do. Will they elect to continue to hold the funds rate high, even though there's growing signs that there's a recession, or not? And there's no way to answer that question until we get there. But in the meantime, I just think the Fed is going to keep the funds rate, keep monetary policy tight for longer so that the economy slows you know, somewhat significantly. And as it does that, corporate earnings are going to get marked down. What's amazing to me, Carrie, is the consensus on Wall Street is that earnings are going to be up 9.5% in 2023. I just don't think there's any chance that that is going to happen. And when earnings start to get marked down, then instead of paying 20 times earnings or 18 times earnings, all of a sudden people are more willing to pay 15 or 16. So you get that double whammy. And technically, you know, from the low in March of 2020, which the S&P was at about 2190, high of 4818 in January of this year, the 618 retracement is right around 3200. So I think at some point in time next year, as all this stuff comes together, the S&P has a good chance of not only retesting the low that we saw in October around 3500, but dropping down closer to the 3200 level. And at that point in time, it's probably going to be a, you know, a good buying opportunity. But I just think there's another shoe to drop as we get into next year.
Yeah, well, unlike you, I don't believe it's going to work because I think other stuff, there's other forces afoot. And it might lower it a little bit. But like you said, energy isn't going to go down because we got policies that are specifically geared at making it go up.
Well, reducing the availability of fossil fuels,
right,
which means
making the
higher
prices
costs
go up. Exactly.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So that's just, that's not going to help. And then, the fact of the matter is, you know, we got the disrupted supply chain. It still hasn't bounced back. We've got shortages in many commodities, and we got all the debt. And then don't forget the fact that the more they increase the Fed's funds rate and all other treasury debt yields, the higher the deficit goes. So we're going to be at a point where, we'll get our recession, but we're not, it is going to turn out that the cure is way worse than the disease ever was.
Well, in fact, I agree with you, Carrie, because I just finished a piece called The Coming Secular Bear Market. And I touch on a number of the things that you just addressed. For each new dollar of debt, back in the 1960s, you'd get about 90 cents of GDP growth. Now it's less than 50 cents on the dollar. So increasing debt and, you know, and more fiscal spending just doesn't have the same juice it used to. And the net interest expense is going to go from about 1.5% to 3% to 4% of GDP. And all of a sudden you're talking numbers of just interest expense alone being $1 trillion. And that money isn't then spent on goods and services or income transfer. It's just servicing the debt. So I think the probabilities are that we are either have already started a secular bear market in the stock market, or we will very soon. And my expectation is it will last 10 to 15 years as we address a lot of these problems that have been building up for a number of decades. And it's going to be painful to address those problems. And the net result is GDP growth is going to continue to average less than 2%. Which is, you know, makes it pretty tough to service big levels of debt. So I agree with you. The Fed is going to do what they're going to do. In the short run, it may help. But ultimately, I just think we're headed for a very challenging time over the next 10 to 15 years. And most people are taught, and most financial advisors, you know, use buy and hold. Well, that makes a lot of sense when you're in a secular bull market, like from 1982 to 2000. From 2009 to 2022. But in a secular bear market, like we saw from 2000 to 2009, 1966 to 1982, buy and hold doesn't work at all because the market isn't making higher highs. It's either going sideways or making lower lows. So I think most people are ill-prepared to deal with this because they haven't had the need, if you will, to develop the tactical skills necessary to deal with a secular bear market. So I'm going to offer to your faithful listeners, Carrie, I'll be happy to send that piece, The Coming Secular Bear Market, out to them. All they have to do is send me an email to jimwelshmacro@gmail.com, and I'll be happy to send it out to them.
All right. We do appreciate that. And it's a question of... They're damned if they do. We always heard that saying, the Fed's in a box, blah, blah, blah. but now they're really boxed in at the pass.
I think so. I think both fiscal and monetary policy have kind of run their course in terms of the degree of effectiveness. And that means at some point in time, it may take 5 years, 7 years, A, people lose faith in the Fed. And then ultimately, does that potentially raise the specter of the dollar not being the reserve currency of the world? And so those are the kinds of things that start to get unearthed and emerge during a secular bear market. It isn't just one thing. It's a number of big things. And each one takes a time and resources to address. And that's why you have a secular bear market. If you look at a chart, and I have a chart in that piece going back 140 years, every secular bull market, no surprise, has been followed by a secular bear market. And I think the pieces have come together to create that environment. So it's not going to be easy probably for much of the next 10 to 15 years to navigate financial markets. But I just think it's important that people start to think about this stuff, because most people won't be thinking about it, including financial advisors. And the net result is they're continue to just say, hey, buy and hold if you hold for the long term. That's great for somebody who's 25, maybe. You can go through a 10 or 15 year period that stinks. But for somebody who went 45 to 50 and you wipe out 10 to 15 years of portfolio gains, that makes, you know, retiring comfortably a very challenging enterprise.
Yeah, well, you know what they say, Jim, in the long run, we're all dead. So,
well, then there's nothing to worry about.
Right. You just don't want to have outlive your money. That's an old cliche in financial planning, right? Hey, so,
yeah. And for a lot of baby boomers, though, unfortunately, that might prove to be the reality.
Hey, so what about what's happening with China? How does that figure into the whole mishmash, the whole equation?
Don't just survive. Thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Fury Gold Mines is a Canada-focused exploration and development company committed to aggressively growing its scalable high-grade gold assets with major drill campaigns planned across its 3.5 million ounce portfolio. Fury is led by a management team of proven explorers and developers with a track record of success in advancing and financing project development. Fury Gold Mines is well positioned to create value for investors with low-risk development growth and the potential for a new major discovery. Fury Gold Mines trades on the TSX and NYSE American under the ticker FURY. To learn more, go to furygoldmines.com. That's furygoldmines.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
Well, again, if global growth, well, again, GDP growth in U.S. is going to be sub 2%. China was an engine of growth for much of the last 20 years. Their population, working age population, peaked around 2015, and they're going to see a significant decline in population. They've increased their debt levels significantly. I think it's up around $3.50 for every dollar of GDP. They've used the engine of real estate, residential development, and just, you know, commercial spending on development to power the economy. Well, I think they, with population shrinking, and a lot of the people have already left the, if you will, the countryside to go to cities, real estate is not going to provide the same engine of growth that it has. The demographics don't support it. And I think the risk here is the U.S. last month, and I don't disagree with Biden doing this. He said, you know, we're just going to stop sending you the technology, the advanced technology that you need to make weapons and everything else. So to me, that kind of kneecaps China, because they're great at duplicating. They're not great at inventing. And I think the risk of China going after Taiwan is rising, because Xi is kind of getting himself boxed in a corner. Their economy is not going to be as good as it has been. And, you know, they're not going to have the technology that they need to accomplish the military stuff that they would like to do. So I think there is a real risk. Again, in the secular bear market, stuff happens. And one of the things that happens are wars. And we've already seen it, obviously, with Russia's invasion of Kuwait, Ukraine.
Yes.
And, you know, just globally, a period of low growth creates more starvation, and a lot of unhappiness as people can't make their basic needs. So the stability of many governments starts to get called into question. So we'll see more instability, I think, globally. And China could be, you know, part of that equation. So this idea of a secular bear market is a big deal. It affects a lot of things cohesively, you know, because they're all kind of working together. And I think that's, you know, the pieces are there. I think you just have to connect the dots.
You're a bundle of joy today, Jim.
Well, you know, Carrie, you know, again, rather than be a Pollyanna, I'm just trying to be realistic. I'm not a negative guy. I mean, I've been pretty bullish for a long time, but I just think these things that have kind of coalesced, problems that have been building for a long time, they finally reach a critical mass. And the same thing happened in 1966 to 82. Inflation broke out just like it broke out last year, and monetary policy had to shift significantly to try to bring inflation down. Once you get a big surge of inflation, it isn't easy to bring down. And as you pointed out, there are issues that are going to make it even more challenging this time around. And I agree with that. And, you know, the market has lived off of 0%, or if you adjust the rates for inflation, even at 1.5-2%, if you have a 0% rate, you're at a -1.5 to -2. In other words, a negative cost for money. And that's what we've seen for much of the last 20 years. And I don't know that that policy is possible in coming years. And that means you're taking out one of the big props under financial assets, especially the equity market, which has feasted off of that.
Well, fortunately, you and I don't have to worry about it so much, because we saw a lot of this coming in the first place. Let's face it, you know, we did.
Well, that's, yeah, that, but again, that's the benefit of not trying to be Pollyanna or, gee, the sky is falling, Chicken Little. To me, is there's a place in the middle. Be realistic and then prepare appropriately. And to me, that means being tactical in this environment much more than just simply buying and holding. I mean, we have more assets are in passive stock markets now than under active management. And the reason for that is in a secular bull market, you know, you keep making higher highs, higher lows, and now all you're focused on is, well, how can I squeeze my costs down? I don't need those active managers. You know, we have a rising tide lifting all the boats. So you have more assets in passive instruments like the S&P 500, spiders, and so forth, because the asset, you know, the cost is like 3 basis points. Right. The problem is, as you know, markets like I do, you know, what happens is eventually the pressure, if we go into a secular bear market and the market fails to reward investors at some point in time, they can't take it anymore and they puke. And I think that's what's going to happen. At some point in time, you've got a lot of money sitting in passive investments that has been treated very well by a secular bull market. And once it starts being abused by a secular bear market, people will reach a breaking point. That's what markets do. You know, they inspire greed, they inspire fear, and secular bear markets are like preeminent in inspiring fear.
All right. One further question. FTX, cryptocurrencies, all of that. What's your take as a seasoned, grizzled financial veteran of many financial wars?
Well, I've got the scars to prove it. No, I mean, the whole idea of crypto being a currency, to me, never made any sense when you had the extreme volatility, even before this last year, but, you know, for years and years. So how can you use crypto to do exchanges for value of goods and services? So I never really got it. It was a wonderful speculative trading environment. The technology at its core, I think, is legitimate in terms of potentially securing transactions and so forth. But the rest of it, Carrie, I think was just rank speculation. And it's another sign of how people get drawn into an idea. And once it starts working, you know, it just attracts more and more money. It's one of the reasons why I think gold didn't trade as well as expected when inflation went from 1.5% to 9%. Gold net in August of 2020, it was $2,070. And most recently, it was just above 1,600, even though inflation went from 1.3% in August of 2020 to over 9%. So maybe it'll be very beneficial for gold to have the money that went to crypto got really burned. Maybe that's a longer term positive for gold, in that that money then will be able to, as it has in the past, gravitate towards gold in periods of inflation.
All right. Well, I'm glad we got your take on that, Jim. Macrotides.com. That's where you go to get Jim's latest work. And look for the link in the show notes to find out where to get a special report on inflation and the road ahead. And while you're at it, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Make sure you go there, sign up for your free newsletter, shoot us an email or a YouTube comment. We will answer. And it's kl@kerrylutz.com. Jim, thanks for stopping by and cheering up our holiday dreariness for us.
Well, happy new year to you and everyone else, and always great to chat with you, Kerry. Thank you.
Likewise, Jim. You be well.
Thanks for listening to Kerry Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.